Okay, that's good.
Wait for a few more people to wander up. Lunch.
I'll get some water.
Julia, she's here.
Would you could come up if you should want it. Or you could point at her.
Well, shall we go ahead and get started? Welcome to the Saturday afternoon session. And our first paper of this session is by Paul Trilsbeck and Gabrielle Müller and Julia Colleen Miller, speaking on creating alternative access layers to the DOBIS archive from existing metadata structure. And Julia, will you just be down there, or you can join for questions afterward?
Yeah.
We can see.
Okay, thank you. Yeah, our talk today will tie in with a more general question that has been addressed in various talks at this conference of how to make the data we have in the archive more accessible to various users. So before we start, I want to run you through the structure of the talk. First, I'll introduce the DOBIS archive to you and the archive structure of the DOBIS archive. Next, we'll have a look at the searching and browsing options in that archive. And then we'll come to the potential problems for users, for non-specialist users. After that, we'll present a solution to these problems, namely creating a portal into the archive. In this case, we'll be talking mainly about a community portal. Then Paul will explain the technology behind the portal. And lastly, we'll talk about some further entry points into the archive. So for those of you who are not familiar with DOBIS, DOBIS is a program funded by the German Volkswagen Foundation for the documentation of endangered languages. It started in 1999 with a few pilot projects, and until now, about 50 large documentation projects have been granted. The central archive for all the projects is housed at the MPI in Nijmegen, and until now, about 45 terabytes of data are contained in that archive. This is a map with all the projects that are working on endangered languages right now within the DOBIS program. And up there in Canada, you see the dot that indicates the location of the Beaver communities that Julia and I have been working with. Beaver is a First Nations language of Canada. It's spoken in Alberta and British Columbia. There are about 150 speakers speaking that language. Now, all the data that the teams have collected and archived can be accessible mainly through three ways. First, by browsing, that is by clicking on nodes in the archive, we'll have a look at that. Then, second, by searching the metadata in the archive. And lastly, by searching the annotations that go with each session, or should go with each session. So this is a screenshot of the Beaver portion, that is a smaller portion of the large DOBIS archive. On the left side, you see the structure we came up with. Each team can create their own metadata structure. This is what we did for Beaver. It works like the folder structure on your computer. That is, you click through it by clicking on those little circles, and it expands the sub-branches until eventually you'll become to the last point in the tree, which is, in our case, a story about the chickadee. On the right-hand side of that interface, you have the metadata, things like the location, the content, participants, and so forth is given there. When you want to listen to the story we just found, or you want to see the video, this can be done in this interface as well. It looks like this. Now, aside from clicking your way through the archive, there's the possibility of searching the metadata. This is done by right-clicking on a node on the left for the sub-branch you want to search. You'll be presented with this interface. Here I was looking for the word for moose. So on the right-hand side here, you find that we have 13 matches in the corpus where the word moose appears in the metadata. It's important for beavers, so yeah, could even be more than that. Similarly, the annotations can be searched. Again, we do a right click on the left hand side where we have the structure on the sub branch we want to search. We get this interface. Again, I was looking for the word for moose. This time we're not searching through the metadata, we're searching the annotations. That is, we're searching through the ELAN files and through the text files. So here we get 220 hits for the word moose, which are displayed below. So by clicking on any of those hits, we will be taken to the data or the larger chunk of audio where this is contained. Okay, both of these searches are much more, or can be much more complex than I've shown you there. Many, many options, and I won't go into detail with that here. Now, however, there are potential problems with this interface as it is of now. First, and obviously, it's only in English, which means that whoever does not speak English is not going to be able to use this archive. Then, the intricate metadata structure, the little tree we came up with on that left side, is only useful for specialist users. And by specialist users, I mean people who came up with that structure. I think for anybody else, it's could be questionable. Okay, it is not possible to know what is there at a glance. That is, you click on each subnode to expand the sub-branches and so forth. So you can't just have a first impression of what is there. Then there are too many clicks to find something. So even when I want to find the chickadee story we just had a look at, it takes a long time because I have to click through 11 little buttons to get there. So this bears the danger that community members will be discouraged to explore the corpus. Not only community members, but any members who have not been thoroughly introduced. However, we would like to make the archive as available as possible to the community. So how can we do that? How can we make the access as easy as possible? And the idea we came up with is to create a community portal. That is, we provided a web interface, a website, and try to keep the interface simple and attractive. We focused on important topics for the community, and we chose data that is relevant in the archive. So that is, I don't think a community member would like to listen to a word list that has been recorded for phonetic analysis. That's not so exciting. We're sorting the data thematically. We're using the local language. In our case, that's English. But in other cases, that could be something else. And we were concerned about keeping the maintenance low. That is, once the portal is set up, it should be self-sustainable. It shouldn't require any further work. So when new resources are added to the archive, they should automatically be integrated into the portal and not require us to link them by hand. Yeah. So this is what it looks like. We tried to keep it simple, and we tried to make it look a little nicer than the archive interface we just saw. There are three portions to this portal. In the first column, we collected stories. Those are stories that the elders have told us. Things like personal stories, where a lady tells us about the first pair of moccasins she made that came out all crumpled and misshapen. Traditional stories, or stories about animals, like why is the raven black and why is the beak so crooked. And lastly, and importantly also, stories about place. In the next section that we called Learn About, we included activities that are culturally important, like drumming, hand games, making moccasins, making moose hide. These are important to the beaver culture, but also these are very endangered. They're lost. Not many young people know how to do this. So in here, we included a broad range of resources. So you'll find under moose hide just a video of someone scraping hide and being in that process. Then you might find a vocabulary list of all the tools you need for scraping hide, for making hide, or a paradigm of I scrape hide, you scrape hide, we all scrape hide. In the next column, we present materials we created for the communities, like the topical dictionary, a calendar, or movies with subtitles. Those are contained in the archive as well, but those are especially hard to find because that's not something where you have a fixed set of what could be there. And lastly, in the fourth column, we included the possibility of learning more about the archive. So for community members or whoever wants to explore the archive a little further, we linked an introduction to searching, to navigating, what I just showed you briefly, and an intro how to download the resources, if that's what people are interested in. So say we wanted, oh no, I forgot one thing. We hope that this portal is useful or can be useful in schools. So one thing could be that students are just left to explore this on their own, clicking through it and finding what is there, listening to stories and so forth. Or it could be used by teachers, I hope, especially the Learn About section, to create little lessons about drumming, having the drum as a topic and then going with the vocabulary that is there, maybe the paradigms and the videos. Okay, so say we want to learn about drums. We would click on that link up there. Can I point? Yeah. Okay. And this would bring us to this interface. Again, this is hoped to be very simple and a little colorful. So what we get here is a paradigm of the verb to drum. We could get a video of someone drumming, or a video of someone telling us how to make a drum. And again, this is very varied, what we have here. We have WAV files, video files, then the text or PDF files. Okay, so we click on a video and it will pop up, and we have Dominic showing us how to make a drum. There are other Dobis teams who started working on portals like this. This is an example for the Ta portal. Ta is a Khoisan language spoken in South Africa. So that's an example of how that could look in other contexts. Then another application of the same technology that Paul's going to talk about later, and also a way of making the archive more accessible, is the idea of creating a general Dobis portal that is aiming this portal at a more varied audience, like researchers or students, journalists, or simply interested laymen who come across this. Okay, and lastly, I wanted to include a portal that has been created in Australia by the OCAP team. And the feature I like most about this is the simple person search. So what you can do is list all the people that have contributed something to the corpus, to the archive, and then go from there. So relatives could use this portal to find stories that their grandfather has told, which is a great idea. Okay, so these are all possible ways to enhance the usability of the archive. And now Paul is going to tell you how it all works.
Yes, so the technology behind this, we try to keep this as generic enough so that it can be applied to a larger variety of portals, so they can make use of the same basic framework. The design and the layout and the selection of which material needs to be included needs to come from the Opus projects together with the speech community. But once they come up with that, then we, as the technical team, do the implementation of the portal, and we host it on our server if that's what they wish. So the technology behind this, there is a REST web service. I'm not going to go in very much into the technical details of that, but it means that the metadata database can be queried via just a simple URL. I will show you an example of that later. And there can be a number of parameters in that URL, and the result of that query you get back as an XML file result, and that can then be further processed in some sort of dynamic web creation environment. So these queries are set up in this portal. So say you want to search for moose in the metadata, then just any file in the archive which contains the moose in the metadata will show up. So when you add some new data with moose in the metadata, it will also be added automatically to the portal. So it's very maintenance-free once it has been set up. So this URL may look a bit scary to some of you, but it's not that complicated, really. So we have we call this REST search interface with a number of parameters. So I want to get some matches I want to get 50 of them, actually. The number is 50, and I have a specific query here which looks in the session name, which is a metadata element of this of the IMDI set. And whoops, what's going on? I pressed on. Yeah, there we go. So it gets 50 matches, and the query that I've specified here is that the word drum with wildcards on the left and the right side should be in the name. There are some more parameters, the node ID where it should start from. So we have this hierarchy of the IMDI metadata, and it should start from a certain node, which in this case is the node of the Beaver corpus. I want to include titles, I want to include URLs, and I want to show the actual resources. So if I perform this query, I get something back in XML, which looks like this. This is just some administrative results, but here you get the actual results that I was looking for. So here you have a certain IMDI session with the name Paradigm Drum, and it has some resources. And if you then transform this XML into something nicer looking, then you get the actual, the same thing as Gabriel already showed. You get this list of resources with some context around it. So this is a very generic kind of way of doing these queries. You can use it in any kind of dynamic setup, and it's fairly easy to integrate in other systems. In our case, we used a specific content management system called Plone. It's an open source content management system written in Python, and there are many add-on modules to do various things. But also, one particularly good thing about it that it's quite good in XML processing already as it is. So we've written just an extension to do these queries and parse them in nice looking lists of search results. So that's about these portals. Some other new things that we've been working on is we had this web cousin of Elan already for quite some time, which was called Annex. It's a tool to visualize EF files and toolbox files and some other files. So it looks a bit similar to what you know from Elan, maybe. So you have a video with the annotations, and the annotations can be shown in various views. So this is sort of a subtitle view. You also have just a plain text view. And this is the more traditional timeline view you see as it is in Elan. And you can click on these things and play back the segments of video just like you would in Elan. So this newer version is written in Flash. It looks a bit nicer, a bit more user-friendly than the old version. So that's something that's coming up soon. Then I'd like to mention something that I saw this morning and something that I became aware of last Sunday before I left. This new tool, Qubit, which is a very nice tool to transform EF files into also nicer looking presentations for non-specialists, basically. Something else you could do from metadata structure, which is not yet possible with the current IMDI set, but it might be in the near future, is to create Google Earth overlays. Julia talked about this yesterday morning. She has some nice Google Earth layers, which she created. And these are mainly created by hand, but if you would have information coordinates in the metadata and also some additional information, you could generate these also automatically in a programmatic way. So that's basically what we wanted to say. Some conclusions. So different user groups have different requirements regarding interfaces. We all know that. But if you have your archival material in certain good practice formats, they can be used and presented in various ways. And these web servers, such as the one we have for the metadata, make it easy to make archival material available in different contexts and online. So thank you. That was what I wanted to say. Yeah, we have been thinking about that. It's not so easy in the current form. This Plone CMS is really a web content management system, which is very dynamic. All the time you click on things, it generates the content automatically. You could make something that fetches just the HTML from that and makes an offline version, probably. It would require some programming, but it would be possible.
Yeah, I thought this was great too. Well, I think this is a wonderful idea. I just wondered, I was trying to get down the URL that you sent to activate the REST architecture, get the XML file back.
Mm-hmm.
Can people offsite do that? Does it
sure.
get an XML file back?
Yep.
Yeah, okay. So, I assume nothing would come back if the content were protected or not.
Well, the metadata is all open, so anyone can do these queries on the whole MPI archive.
Oh, right. So you just get the metadata.
Yeah, that's right.
In our introduction in the archive, it's an HTML page that talks about how to ask for permission from you to talk.
course, you know, approved by the community. You know, when you have a long story, you want to be careful about how you edit it. And so these were approved edits of the longer stories.
Right. Okay. That's what I thought.
Yeah.
And yeah. I went to the archive and couldn't get to the actual.
Right. Exactly. Yeah. And I'm still trying to work out the Google Earth introduction page that will step you through all the links and the processes and accessibility of the document.
Some statistics, like, yeah, not really. We haven't thought of it, but it will. The CMS will keep statistics of what is visited, so you could generate a report from that. Yeah, sure. Mm-hmm. Good idea.
This room is scheduled for 2:40, and I think we'll keep to that schedule.